work. If I didn't know exactly where to look, I wouldn't notice the cycle was there at all. You do this a lot, I see. Cal turns back to me, one hand in his pocket. Palaces can get stuffy. And crowded bars, red bars, aren't? I ask, pushing the topic. But he starts walking toward the village, setting a fast pace like he can outrun the question. I don't go out to drink, Mayor. So what? You just catch pickpockets and hand out jobs willy-nilly? When he stops short and whirls around, I knock into his chest, feeling for a moment the solid weight behind his frame. Then I realize he's laughing, deeply. Did you just say willy-nilly? He says between chuckles. My face blushes red beneath my makeup and I give him a little shove. Very inappropriate, my mind chides. Just answer the question. His smile remains, though the laughter fades away. I don't do this for myself, he says. You have to understand, Mayor, I'm going to be king one day. I don't have the luxury of being selfish. I'd think the king would be the only person with that luxury. He shakes his head, his eyes forlorn as they run over me. I wish that were true. Cal's fist clenches open and closed, and I can almost see the flames on his skin, hot and rising with his anger. But it passes, leaving only an ember of regret in his eyes. When he finally starts walking again, it's at a more forgiving pace. A king should know his people, and that's why I sneak out, he murmurs. I do it in the capital, too, and at the warfront. I like to see how things really are in the kingdom, instead of being told by advisors and diplomats. That's what a good king would do. He acts like he should be ashamed for wanting to be a good leader. Maybe, in the eyes of his father and all those other fools, that's the way it should be. Strength and power are the words Cal has been raised to know. Not goodness, not kindness, not empathy or bravery or equality or anything else that a ruler should strive for. And what do you see, Cal? I ask, gesturing toward the village coming into view between the trees. My heart jumps in my chest, knowing I'm so close. I see a world on the edge of a blade. Without balance, it will fall. He sighs, knowing it's not the answer I want to hear. You don't know how precarious things are, how close this world is to falling back into ruin. My father does everything he can to keep us all safe, and so will I. My world is already in ruin, I say, kicking at the dirt road beneath us. All around us, the trees seem to open, revealing the muddy place I call home. Compared to the hall, it must look like a slum, like a hell. Why can't he see that? Your father keeps your people safe, not mine. Changing the world has costs, Mayor, he says. Many would die, Reds most of all. And in the end, there wouldn't be victory, not for you. You don't know the bigger picture. So tell me, I bristle, hating his words. Show me the bigger picture. The Lakelands, they're like us. A monarchy, nobles, a silver elite to rule the rest. And the Piedmont princes, our own allies, would never back a nation where Reds are equal. Prairie and Taraxes are the same. Even if Norda changed, the rest of the continent would not let it last. We would be invaded, divided, torn apart. More war, more death. I remember Julian's map. The breadth of the greater world beyond our country, all controlled by Silvers with nowhere for us to turn. What if you're wrong? What if Norda is the beginning? The change the others need? You don't know where freedom leads. Cal has no answer for that, and we fall into bitter silence. This is it, I mutter, stopping under the familiar outline of my house. My feet are silent on the porch, a far cry from Cal's heavy, stomping steps that make the wood beams creak. His familiar heat rolls off him, and for a split second, I imagine him sending the house up in flames. He senses my unease and puts a warm hand on my shoulder, but that does nothing to settle me. I can wait below if you want, he he whispers, taking me by surprise. We don't want to chance them recognizing me. They won't. Even though my brother served, they probably wouldn't know you from a bedpost. Shade would, I thought, but Shade is smart enough to keep his mouth shut. Besides, you said you want to know what's not worth fighting for. With that, I pull open the door, stepping through to the home that is no longer my own. It feels like taking a step back in time. The house ripples with a chorus of snores, not just from my father, but from the lumpy shape in the sitting area as well. Bree slumps in the overstuffed chair, a pile of muscle and thin blankets. His dark hair is still closely shaved in the army style, and there are scars on his arms and face, testaments to his time fighting. He must have lost a bet with Tramie, who tosses and turns up in my cot. Shade is nowhere to be seen, but he's never been one for sleep. Probably out prowling the village, looking up old girlfriends. Rise and shine! I laugh, ripping the blanket off Bree in a smooth motion. He crashes to the floor, probably hurting the floor more than himself, and rolls to a stop at my feet. For half a second, it looks like he might fall back asleep. Then he blinks at me, bleary-eyed and confused. In short, his usual self.
Mare?
Shut your face, Bree! People are trying to sleep! Tramie groans in the dark. All of you, quiet! Dad roars from his bedroom, making us all jump. I never realized how much I missed this. Bree blinks the sleep from his eyes and hugs me to him, laughing deep in his chest. A nearby thunk announces Tramie as he jumps from the upper loft, landing beside us on nimble feet. It's Mare! He shouts, pulling me up from the floor and into his arms. He's thinner than Bree, but not the weedy string bean I remember. There are hard knots of muscle under my hands. The last few years have not been easy for him. Good to see you, Tramie. I breathe against him, feeling like I might burst. The bedroom door bangs open, revealing Mom in a tattered bathrobe. She opens her mouth to scold the boys, but the sight of me kills her words. Instead, she smiles and claps her hands together. Oh, you've finally come to visit! Dad follows her, wheezing and wheeling his chair into the main room. Gisa is the last to wake up, but she only pokes her head out over the loft ledge, looking down. Tramie finally lets me go, putting me back down next to Cal, who's doing a wonderful job looking awkward and out of place.
Heard you caved and got a job,
Tramie teases, poking me in the ribs. Bree chuckles, ruffling my hair.
The army wouldn't want her anyway. She'd rob her legion blind.
I shove him with a smile. Seems the army doesn't want you either. Discharged, eh? Dad answers for them, wheeling forward.
Some lottery, the letter said. Won an honorable discharge for the Barrow Boys. Full pension, too.
I can tell he doesn't believe a word of it, but Dad doesn't press the subject. Mom, on the other hand, eats it right up. Brilliant, isn't it? The government finally doing something for us, she says, kissing Bree on the cheek. And now you with a job! The pride radiates off her like I've never seen. Usually she saves all of it for Gisa. She's proud of a lie. It's about time this family came into some luck. Up above us, Gisa scoffs. I don't blame her. My luck broke her hand and her future. Yes, we're very lucky, she huffs, finally moving to join us. Her going is slow, moving down the ladder with one hand. When she reaches the floor, I can see her splint is wrapped in colored cloth. With a pang of sadness, I realize it's a piece of her beautiful embroidery that will never be finished. I reach out to hug her, but she pulls away, her eyes on Cal. She seems to be the only one to notice him. Who's that? Flushing, I realize I've almost forgotten him completely. Oh, this is Cal. He's another servant up at the hall with me. Hi, he manages, giving a stupid little wave. Mom giggles like a schoolgirl and waves back, her gaze lingering on his muscled arms. But Dad and my brothers aren't so charmed. You're not from these parts, Dad growls, staring at Cal like he's some kind of bug. I can smell it on you.
It's just the hall, Dad, I protest, but Cal cuts me off.
I'm from Harbor Bay, he says, making sure to drop his R's in the usual harbor accent. I started serving at Ocean Hill, the royal residence out there, and now I travel with the pack when they move.
He glances at me sideways, a knowing look in his eye. A lot of the servants do that.
Mom draws a rattled breath and reaches for my arm.
Will you? Do you have to go with those people when they leave?
I want to tell them that I didn't choose this, that I'm not walking away willingly, but I have to lie for their sake.
It was the only position they had. Besides, it's good money.
I think I've got a pretty good idea what's going on, Bree growls, face to face with Cal.
To his credit, Cal barely bats an eye at him.
Nothing's going on, he says coolly, meeting Bree's glare with equal fire in his eyes.
Maya chose to work for the palace. She signed a contract for a year's service, and that's it.
With a grunt, Bree backs away.
I like the warm boy better, he grumbles.
Stop being a child, Bree, I snap.
My mom flinches at my harsh voice, like she's forgotten what I sound like after only 3 weeks. Strangely, her eyes swim with tears. She's forgetting you. That's why she wants you to stay, so she doesn't forget.
Mom, don't cry, I say, stepping forward to hug her. She feels so thin in my arms, thinner than I remember. Or maybe I just never noticed how frail she's become.
It's not just you, dear. It's...
She looks away from me, to Dad. There's a pain in her eyes, a pain I don't understand. The others can't bear to look at her. Even Dad stares at his useless feet. A grim weight settles on the house, and then I realize what's going on, what they're trying to protect me from. My voice shakes when I speak, asking a question I don't want to know the answer to.
Where's Shade?
Mom crumples in on herself, barely making it to a chair at the kitchen table before she devolves into sobs. Bree and Tramie can't bear to watch, both turning away. Yisa doesn't move, staring at the floor like she wants to drown in it. No one speaks, leaving only the sound of my mother's tears and my father's labored breathing to fill the hole my brother once occupied. My brother, my closest brother. I fall backward, almost missing a step in my anguish, but Cal steadies me. I wish he wouldn't. I want to fall down, to feel something hard and real, so the pain in my head won't hurt so badly. My hand strays to my ear, grazing over the three stones I hold so dearly. The third, Shade Stone, feels cold against my skin.
We didn't want to tell you in a letter, Gisa whispers, picking at her splint. He died before the discharge came.
The urge to electrify something, to pour my rage and sorrow into a single bolt of biting power, has never felt so strong.
Control it, I tell myself.
I can't believe I was worried about Cal burning the house down. Lightning can destroy as easily as flame. Gisa fights tears, forcing herself to say the words.
He tried to run away. He was executed, beheaded.
My legs give way so quickly, even Cal doesn't have a chance to catch me. I can't hear, I can't see, I can only feel. Sorrow, shock, pain, the whole world spinning around me. The light bulbs buzz with electricity, screaming at me so loudly, I think my head might split. The fridge crackles in the corner, its old, bleeding battery pulsing like a dying heart. They taunt me, tease me, trying to make me crack, but I won't. I won't.
Mare.
Cal breathes in my ear, his arms warm around me, but he might as well be talking to me from across an ocean.
Mare. I heave a painful gasp, trying to catch my breath. My cheeks feel wet, though I don't remember crying.
Executed. My blood boils under my skin. It's a lie. He didn't run. He was in the guard, and they found out. They killed him for it. They murdered him. I have never known anger like this. Not when the boys left, not when Killorn came to me, not even when they broke Giza's hand. An ear-splitting whine screeches through the house as the fridge, the light bulbs, and the wiring in the walls kick into high gear. Electricity hums, making me feel alive and angry and dangerous. Now I'm creating the energy, pushing my own strength through the house, just like Julian taught me. Cal yells, shaking me, trying to get through somehow. But he can't. The power is in me and I don't want to let go. It feels better than pain. Glass rains down on us as the light bulbs explode, popping like corn in a skillet. Pop, pop, pop. It almost drowns out Mom's scream. Someone pulls me to my feet with rough strength. Their hands go to my face, holding me still as they speak. Not to comfort me, not to empathize, but to snap me out of it. I would know that voice anywhere. Mare, pull yourself together! I look up to see clear green eyes and a face full of worry. Killorn. Knew you'd stumble back eventually, he mumbles. Kept an eye out. His hands are rough against my skin, but calming. He brings me back to reality, to a world where my brother is dead. The last surviving light bulb swings above us, barely illuminating the room and my stunned family. But that's not the only thing lighting up the darkness. Purple-white sparks dance around my hands, growing weaker by the moment, but plain as day. My lightning. I won't be able to lie my way out of this one. Killorn pulls me to a chair, his face a storm cloud of confusion. The others only stare, and with a pang of sadness, I realize they're afraid. But Killorn isn't afraid at all. He's angry. What did they do to you? He rumbles, his hands inches from mine. The sparks fade away entirely, leaving just skin and shaking fingers. They didn't do anything. I wish this was their fault. I wish I could blame this on someone else. I look over Killorn's head, meeting Cal's eyes. Something releases in him, and he nods, communicating without words. I don't have to lie about this. This is what I am. Killorn's frown deepens. Are you one of them? I've never heard so much anger, so much disgust, forced into a single sentence. It makes me feel like dying. Are you? Mom recovers first, and without a glimmer of fear, takes my hand. Mare is my daughter, Killorn, she says, fixing him with a frightening stare I didn't know she could muster. We all know that. My family murmurs in agreement, rallying to my side, but Killorn remains unconvinced. He stares at me like I'm a stranger, like we haven't known each other all our lives. Give me a knife and I'll settle this right now, I say, glaring back at him. I'll show you what color I bleed. This calms him a bit and he pulls back. I don't understand. That makes two of us. I think I'm with Killorn on this one. We know who you are, Mare, but... Bree stumbles, searching for the right thing to say. He's never been one for words. How? I barely know what to say, but I do my best to explain. Again, I'm painfully aware of Cal's presence, always listening, so I leave out the guard and Julian's findings to lay out the last 3 weeks as plainly as possible, pretending to be Silver and being betrothed to a prince. How? I barely know what to say, but I do my best to explain. Again, I'm painfully aware of Cal's presence, always listening, so I leave out the guard and Julian's findings to lay out the last 3 weeks as plainly as possible, pretending to be Silver and being betrothed to a prince, learning to control myself. It sounds preposterous, but they listen intently. We don't know how or why, just that this is. I finish, a holding out my other hand. I don't miss Tramie flinch away. We might never know what this means. Mom's hand tightens on mine in a display of support. The small comfort does wonders for me. I'm still angry, still devastatingly sad, but the need to destroy something fades. I'm gaining back some semblance of control, enough to keep myself in check. I think it's a miracle, she murmurs, forcing a smile for my sake. We've always wanted better for you, and now we're getting it. Bree and Tramie are safe. Gisa won't have to worry. We can live happy. And you, her watery eyes meet mine. You, my dear, will be someone special. What more can a mother ask? I wish her words were true, but I nod anyway, smiling for my mother and my family. I'm getting better at lying, and they seem to believe me. But not Killorn. He still seethes, trying to hold back another outburst. What's he like? The prince, Mom prods. Maven. Dangerous ground. I can feel Cal listening, waiting to hear what I have to say about his younger brother. What can I say? That he's kind? That I'm beginning to like him? That I still don't know if I can trust him? Or worse, that I can never trust anyone again? He's not what I expected. Gisa notes my discomfort and turns toward Cal. So, who's this? Your bodyguard? She says, changing the subject with the slightest wink. I am, Cal says, answering for me. He knows I don't want to lie to my family, not more than I have to. And I'm sorry, but we have to be going soon. His words are like a twisting knife, but I must obey them. Yes. Mom stands with me, holding onto my hand so tightly I'm afraid it might break. We won't say anything, of course. Not a word, Dad agrees. My siblings nod as well, swearing to be silent. But Killorn's face falls into a dark scowl. For some reason, he's become so angry, and I can't for the life of me say why. But I'm angry too. Shade's death still weighs on me like a terrible stone. Killorn? Yeah, I won't talk, he spits. Before I can stop him, he gets up from his chair and sweeps out in a whirlwind that spins the air. The door slams behind him, shaking the walls. I'm used to Killorn's emotions, his rare moments of despair, but this rage is something new from him. I don't know how to deal with it. My sister's touch brings me back, reminding me that this is goodbye. This is a gift, she whispers in my ear. Don't waste it. You'll come back, won't you? Bree says, and Gisa pulls away. For the first time since he left for war, I see fear in his eyes. You're a princess now. You get to make the rules. I wish. Cal and I exchange glances. I can tell by the tight set of his mouth and the darkness in his eyes what my answer should be. I'll try, I whisper, my voice breaking. One more lie can't hurt. When we reach the edge of the stilts, Gisa's goodbye still haunts me. There was no blame in her eyes, even though I've taken everything from her. Her last words echo on the wind, drowning out everything else. Don't waste it. I'm sorry about your brother, Cal blurts out. I didn't know he was already dead. Executed for desertion. Another lie. The rage rises again, and I don't even want to control it. But what can I do about it? What can I do to avenge my brother, or even try to save the others? Don't waste it. I need to make one more stop. Before Cal can protest, I put on my best smile. It won't take long at all, I promise. To my surprise, he nods slowly in the dark.
A job at the hall, that's very prestigious,
Will chortles as I take a seat inside his wagon. The old blue candle still burns, casting shifting light around us. As I suspected, Farley is long gone. When I'm sure the door and windows are shut, I drop my voice. I'm not working there, Will. To my surprise, Will waves a hand at me.
Oh, I know all that. Tea?
No. My words shake with shock.
How did you...
The Royal Monkeys chose a queen this past week. Of course they had to broadcast it in the Silver Cities, a voice says from behind a curtain. The figure steps out, revealing not Farley, but what looks like a beanpole in human form. His head scrapes the ceiling, making him duck awkwardly. His crimson hair is long, matching the red sash draped across his body from shoulder to hip. It's clasped with the same sun badge Farley wore in her broadcast, and I don't miss the gun belt around his waist, full of shiny bullets and a pair of pistols. He's Scarlet Guard, too.
You've been all over the silver screens, Lady Titanos.
He says my title like a curse.
You and that Samos girl. Tell me, is she as unpleasant as she looks?
This is Tristan, one of Farley's lieutenants,
Will pipes in. He turns a chiding eye on him.
Tristan, be gentle.
Why? I scoff. Evangeline Samos is a bloodthirsty jerk. Smiling, Tristan throws a smug look at Will. They aren't all monkeys, I add quietly, remembering Maven's kind words earlier today.
Are you talking about the prince you're engaged to, or the one waiting in the woods?
Will asks calmly, like he's asking about the price of flour. In stark contrast, Tristan erupts, vaulting out of his seat. I beat him to the door, two hands outstretched. Thankfully, I keep myself in check. The last thing I need is to electrify a member of the Scarlet Guard.
You brought a silver here?
He hisses down at me.
The prince? Do you know what we could do if we took him in? What we could bargain for?
Though he towers over me, I don't back down.
You leave him alone.
A few weeks in the lap of luxury, and your blood is as silver as theirs, he spits, looking like he wants to kill me.
You're going to electrocute me, too?
That stings, and he knows it. I drop my hands, afraid they might betray me.
I'm not protecting him, I'm protecting you, you stupid fool. Cal is a soldier, born and bred, and he could burn this whole village down if he really wanted to.
Not that he would. I hope. Tristan's hand strays to his gun.
I'd like to see him try.
But Will lays a wrinkled hand on his arm. The touch is enough to make the rebel deflate.
That's enough,
he whispers.
What did you come here for, Mare? Killorn is safe, and so are your siblings.
I heave a breath, still staring down Tristan. He just threatened to kidnap Cal and hold him for ransom. And for whatever reason, the thought of such a thing unsettles me to my core. One word out, and I'm already struggling. Shade was part of the guard. It's not a question anymore, but a truth. Will lowers his gaze, apologetic, and Tristan even hangs his head. They killed him for it. They killed my brother, and I have to act like it doesn't bother me.
You're dead if you don't.
I know that. I'll say whatever they want when the time comes, but... My voice catches a little, on the edge of this new path. I'm in the palace, the center of their world. I'm quick, I'm quiet, and I can help the cause. Tristan sucks in a ragged breath, pulling back to his full height. Despite his anger earlier, there's now something like pride shining in his eyes. You want to join up?
I do.
Will clenches his jaw, his stare piercing through me.
I hope you know what you're committing to. This isn't just my war, or Farley's, or the Scarlet Guard's. It's yours, until the very end. And not to avenge your brother, but to avenge us all. To fight for the ones before, and to save the ones yet to come.
His gnarled hand reaches for mine, and for the first time, I notice a tattoo around his wrist. A red band, like the ones they make us wear, except now he's wearing his forever. It's part of him, like the blood in our veins.
Are you with us, Mayor Barrow?
He says, his hand closing over mine. More war, more death, Cal said. But there's a chance he's wrong. There's a chance we can change it. My fingers tighten, holding on to Will. I can feel the weight of my action, the importance behind it. I'm with you.
We will rise,
he breathes, in unison with Tristan. I remember the words and speak with them. Red as the dawn. In the flickering candlelight, our shadows look like monsters on the walls. When I join back up with Cal at the edge of town, I feel lighter somehow, emboldened by my decision and the prospect of what's to come. Cal walks alongside me, glancing over occasionally, but says nothing. Where I would poke and prod and forcibly pull an answer out of someone, Cal is the complete opposite. Maybe it's a military tactic he picked up in one of his books. Let the enemy come to you. Because that's what I am now. His enemy. He perplexes me just like his brother. Both of them are kind, even though they know I'm red, even though they shouldn't even see me at all. But Cal took me home, and Maven was good to me, wanting to help. They are strange boys. When we enter the woods again, Cal's demeanor changes, hardening to something serious. I'll have to talk with the Queen about changing your schedule. Why? You almost exploded in there, he says gently. You'll have to go into training with us, to make sure something like that doesn't happen again. Julian is training me. But even the little voice in my head knows Julian is no substitute for what Cal, Maven, and Evangeline go through. If I learned even half of what they know, who knows what help I could be to the guard, to Shade's memory. Well, if it gets me out of protocol, I won't say no. Suddenly, Cal jumps back from his cycle. His hands are on fire, and an equal blazing light burns in his eyes. Someone's watching us. I don't bother questioning him. Cal's soldier sense is sharp, but what could threaten him here? What could he possibly be afraid of in the woods of a sleepy, poor village? A village crawling with rebels, I remind myself. But instead of Farley or armed revolutionaries, Killorn steps out of the leaves. I forgot how sly he is, how easily he can move through darkness. Cal's hands extinguish in a puff of smoke. Oh, you. Killorn tears his eyes away from me, glaring at Cal. He inclines his head in a condescending bow. Excuse me, Your Highness. Instead of trying to deny it, Cal stands a little straighter, looking like the king he was born to be. He doesn't reply and goes back to freeing his cycle from the leaves, but I feel his eyes on me, watching every second that passes between Killorn and me. You're really doing this? Killorn says, looking like a wounded animal. You're really leaving? To be one of them? The words sting more than a slap. This is not a choice, I want to tell him. You saw what happened in there, what I can do. They can help me. Even I'm surprised at how easily the lie comes. One day I might even be able to lie to myself, to trick my mind into thinking I'm happy. I'm where I'm supposed to be. He shakes his head, one hand grabbing my arm like he can pull me back into the past, where our worries were simple. You're supposed to be here. Mayor, Cal waits patiently, leaning against the seat of the cycle, but his voice is firm, a warning. I have to go. I try to push past Killorn to leave him behind, but he won't let me. He's always been stronger than me, and as much as I want to let him hold on to me, it just can't be. Mayor, please. A wave of heat pulses against us, like a strong beam of sunlight.
Let her go, Cal rumbles, standing over me.
The heat rolls off him, almost rippling the air. The calm he fights to maintain thins, threatening to come undone. Killorn scoffs in his face, itching for a fight. But he's like me. We're thieves, We're rats. We know when to fight and when to run. Reluctantly, he pulls back, letting his fingers trail along my arm. This might be the last time we see each other. The air cools, but Cal doesn't step back. I'm his brother's betrothed. He has to be protective of me.
You bargained for me, too.
To save me from conscription, Killorn says softly, finally understanding the price I've paid. You have a bad habit of trying to save me. I can barely nod, and I have to pull the helmet onto my head to hide the tears welling in my eyes. Numbly, I follow Cal to the cycle and slide onto the seat behind him. Killorn backs away, flinching when the cycle revs up. Then he smirks at me, his features curling into an expression that used to make me want to punch him.
I'll tell Farley you said hello.
The cycle growls like a beast, tearing me away from Killorn and the stilts and my old life. Fear curls through me like a poison, until I'm scared from head to toe. But not for myself. Not anymore. I'm scared for Killorn, for the idiotic thing he's going to do. He's going to find Farley, and he's going to join her.
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook, so please check your library for the next part of this audiobook. Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program. This is Audible.
Red Queen by Victoria Aveyard. 15. The next morning, I open my eyes to see a shaded figure standing by my bedside. This is it. I left, I broke the rules, and they're going to kill me for it. But not without a fight. Before the figure gets a chance, I fly out of bed, ready to defend myself. My muscles tense while the delightful buzzing comes to life inside me. But instead of an assassin, I'm staring at a red uniform. And I recognize the woman wearing it. Walsh looks the same as she did before, though I certainly don't. She stands next to a metal cart filled with tea and bread and anything else I might want for breakfast. Ever the dutiful servant, she keeps her mouth clamped shut, but her eyes scream at me. She stares at my hand, at the now too familiar sparks creeping around my fingers. I shake them away, brushing off the veins of light until they disappear back into my skin. I'm so sorry, I exclaim, jumping away from her. Still, she doesn't speak. Walsh! But she busies herself with the food. Then, to my great surprise, she mouths 5 words to me. They are words I'm beginning to know, like a prayer or a curse. Rise, red as the dawn. Before I can respond, before my shock can register, Walsh presses a cup of tea into my hand. Wait! I reach out for her, but she dodges my hand, sweeping into a low bow. My lady, she says, sharply ending our conversation. I let her go, watching her back out of the room until there's nothing left but the echo of her unspoken words. Walsh is in the guard, too. The teacup feels cold in my hand, strangely cold. I look down to find it's not full of tea, but water, and at the bottom of the cup, a piece of paper bleeds ink. The ink swirls as I read the message, the water leaching it away, erasing any trace, until there's nothing left but cloudy gray liquid and a blank curl of paper. No evidence of my first act of rebellion. The message isn't hard to remember. It's only one word. Midnight. This knowledge that I have a connection to the group so close by should comfort me, but for some reason I find myself shivering. Maybe cameras aren't the only things watching me here. And it's not the only note waiting for me. My new schedule sits on the nightstand, written in the Queen's maddeningly perfect handwriting. Your schedule has changed. 0630, breakfast. 0700, training. 1000, protocol.
1130, luncheon. 1300, protocol. 1400, lessons. 1800, dinner. Lucas will escort you to all. Schedule is not negotiable. Her Royal Highness, Queen Alara.
So, they finally bumped you up to training? Lucas grins at me, a rare bit of pride shining through as he leads me to my first session.
Either you've been very good or very bad.
A little bit of both.
More bad, I think, remembering my episode last night at home. I know the new schedule is Cal's doing, but I didn't expect him to work so fast. Truthfully, I'm excited for training. If it's anything like what I saw Cal and Maven go through, the ability practice in particular, I'll be hopelessly far behind, but at least I'll have someone to talk to. And if I'm really lucky, Evangeline will be deathly ill and stuck in bed for the rest of her miserable life.
Lucas shakes his head, chuckling.
Be prepared. The instructors are famous for being able to break even the strongest soldiers. They won't take well to your sass.
I don't take well to being broken, I retort.
What was your training like?
Well, I went straight to the army when I was 9, so my experience was a bit different, he says, eyes darkening at the memory.
9? The thought seems impossible to me. Abilities or not, this can't be true. But Lucas shrugs like it's nothing.
The front is the best place for training. Even the princes were trained at the front for a time.
But you're here now, I say. My eyes linger on Lucas's uniform, on the black and silver of security. You're not a soldier anymore. For the first time, Lucas's dry smile disappears completely.
It wears on you, he admits, more to himself than to me.
Men are not meant to be at war for long. And what about Reds? I hear myself ask. Bree, Tramie, Shade, Dad, Killorn's father, and 1,000 others, 1,000,000 others. Can they stand war better than Silvers?
We reach the door to the training hall before Lucas finally answers, looking a little uncomfortable.
That's the way the world works. Reds serve, Reds work, Reds fight. It's what they're good at. It's what they're meant to do.
I have to bite my tongue to keep myself from shouting at him. Not everyone is special.
Anger boils in me, but I don't say a word against Lucas. Losing my temper, even with him, won't be smiled upon.
I can take it from here, I say stiffly. He notes my discomfort, frowning a little. When he speaks, his voice is low and fast, as if he doesn't want to be overheard.
I don't have the luxury of questions, he mutters. His black eyes bore into mine, full of meaning. And neither do you.
My heart clenches, terrified by his words and their veiled meaning. Lucas knows there's more to me than what he's been told.
Lucas, it's not my place to ask questions.
He furrows his brow, trying to make me understand, trying to put me at ease.
Lady Titanos.
The title sounds firmer than ever, becoming my shield as well as the queen's weapon.
Lucas will not ask questions. Despite his black eyes, his silver blood, his Samos family, he will not pull at the thread that could unravel my existence.
Keep to your schedule, my lady.
He pulls back, more formal than I've ever seen him. With a flick of his head, he gestures to the door where a red attendant waits.
I'll collect you after training.
Thank you, Lucas, is all I can manage. He's given me so much more than he knows.
The attendant hands me a stretchy black suit with purple and silver stripes. He points me to a tiny room, where I change quickly, slipping out of my usual clothes and into the jumpsuit. It reminds me of my old clothes, the ones I used back in the stilts, worn by time and movement, but trim and tight enough not to slow me down. When I enter the training hall, I'm painfully aware of everyone staring at me, not to mention the dozens of cameras. The floor feels soft and springy beneath my feet, cushioning each step. An immense skylight rises above us, showing a blue summer sky full of clouds to taunt me. Winding stairs connect the several levels cut into the walls, each at varying heights with different equipment. There are many windows as well,
one of which I know opens to Lady Blanos's classroom. Where the others go or who might be watching from them, I have no idea. I should be nervous about walking into a room full of teen warriors, all of them better trained than me. Instead, I'm thinking about the insufferable icicle of bone and metal known as Evangeline Samos. I barely make it halfway across the floor before her mouth opens, dripping venom.
Graduated from protocol already? Did you finally master the art of sitting with your legs crossed?
She sneers, jumping up from a weightlifting machine. Her silver hair is tied back into a complicated braid I'd very much like to cut off, but the deathly sharp metal blades at her waist give me pause. Like me, like everyone else, she wears a jumpsuit emblazoned with the colors of her house. In black and silver, she looks deadly. Sonia and Elaine flank her with matching smirks. Now that they're not intimidating me, they seem to be sucking up to the future queen herself. I do my best to ignore them all and find myself looking for Maven. He sits in a corner, separated from the others. At least we can be alone together. Whispers follow me, as more than a dozen noble teenagers watch me walk toward him. A few bow their heads, trying to be courteous, but most look cautious. The girls are especially on edge. After all, I did take one of their princes away. Took you long enough, Maven chuckles once I sit down next to him. He doesn't seem to be part of the crowd, nor does he want to be. If I didn't know any better, I'd say you were trying to stay away from us. Just one person in particular, I reply, casting a glance back to Evangeline. She holds court near the target wall, where she shows off for her cronies in a dazzling display. Her metal knives sing through the air, digging into the dead center of their targets. Maven watches me watch her, his eyes thoughtful. When we go back to the capital, you won't have to see her so much, he murmurs. She and Cal will have their hands full, touring the country, fulfilling their duties, and we'll have ours. The prospect of getting far away from Evangeline is exciting, but also reminds me of the steadily ticking clock moving against me. Soon I'll be forced to leave the hall, the river valley, and my family far behind.
Do you know when you... I stumble, correcting myself. I mean, when we go back to the capital?
After the parting ball. You were told about that?
Yes, your mother mentioned it, and Lady Blanos is trying to teach me how to dance.
I trail off, feeling embarrassed. She tried to teach me a few steps yesterday, but I just ended up falling all over myself. Thieving I can do just fine, but dancing is apparently out of my reach. Keyword, trying. Don't worry, we won't have to deal with the worst of it. The thought of dancing terrifies me, but I swallow the fear. Who will? Cal, he says without hesitation. Big Brother has to tolerate too many silly conversations and dance with a lot of annoying girls. I remember last year. He stops to laugh at the memory. Sonia Ural spent the entire time following him around, cutting into dances, trying to drag him away for some fun. I had to interfere and suffer through two songs with her just to give Cal some respite. The thought of the two brothers united against a legion of desperate girls makes me laugh, thinking about the lengths they must have gone to save each other. But as my smirk spreads, Maven's smile fades. At least this time he'll have Samos hanging off his arm. The girls wouldn't dare cross her. I snort, remembering her sharp, biting grip on my arm. Poor Cal. And how was your visit yesterday? He says, referring to my jaunt home, so Cal didn't fill him in. Difficult. It's the only way I know how to describe it. Now my family knows what I am, and Kaloran has thrown himself to the wolves. And of course, Shade is dead. One of my brothers was executed just before the release came. He shifts next to me, and I expect him to be uncomfortable. After all, it was his own people who did it. Instead, he puts a hand over mine. I'm so sorry, Mare. I'm sure he didn't deserve it. No, he didn't, I whisper, remembering why my brother died.
Now I'm on the same path. Maven stares at me intently, like he's trying to read the secret in my eyes. For once I'm glad for Blanos' lessons, or else I would assume Maven could read minds as well as the Queen. But no, he's a burner, and a burner alone. Few Silvers inherit abilities from their mothers, and no one has ever had more than one ability. So my secret, my new allegiance to the Scarlet Guard, is mine. When he extends a hand to help me up, I take it. All around us, the others warm up, mostly stretching or jogging around the room. But a few are more impressive. Elaine slips in and out of my vision as she bends the light around herself until she disappears altogether. A Windweaver boy, Oliver of House Larys, creates a miniature whirlwind between his hands, stirring up tiny bits of dust. Sonia lazily trades blows with Andros Igri, a short but muscular 18-year-old. As a Silk, Sonia is brutally skilled and fast and should be able to best him, but Andros matches her blow for blow in a violent dance. The Silvers of House Igri are eyes, meaning they can see the immediate future, and Andros is using his abilities to their full extent. Neither one seems to gain the upper hand, playing a game of balance rather than strength. Just imagine what they can really do. So strong, so powerful. And these are only the kids. And just like that, my hope evaporates, shifting into fear. Lines, a voice says, barely a whisper. My new instructor enters without a sound, Cal at his side, with the Telki from House Provost behind them both. Like a good soldier, Cal walks in step with the instructor, who seems tiny and unassuming next to Cal's bulk. There are wrinkles in his pale skin, and his hair is as white as his clothing, a testament to his true age and his house. House Arvin, the silent house, I remember, thinking back to my lessons. A major house, full of power and strength, and all the things the Silvers put their faith in. I even remember him from before I became Marina Titanos, from when I was a little girl. He would oversee the broadcasted executions in the capital, lording over the Reds and even the Silvers sentenced to die. And now I know why they chose him to do it. The Haven girl blinks back into existence, suddenly visible again, while the churning wind dies in Oliver's hands. Evangeline's knives drop out of the air, and even I feel a calm blanket of nothing fall over me, blotting out my electrical sense. He is Rain Arvin, the instructor, the executioner, the silence. He can reduce a Silver to what they hate most, a Red. He can turn their abilities off. He can make them normal. While I gawk, Maven pulls me into place behind him, with Cal at the head of our line. Evangeline leads the line next to us, and for once she doesn't seem concerned with me. Her eyes stay on Cal as he settles in, looking quite at home in his place of authority. Arvin doesn't waste time introducing me. In fact, he barely seems to notice I've joined his session. "Laps," he says, his voice rough and low. Good, something I can actually do. We set off in our lines, circling the room at an easy pace in blissful quiet. I push myself faster, enjoying the exercise I missed so much, until I'm speeding right past Evangeline. Then it's just Cal next to me, setting the pace for the rest of them. He quirks a smile at me, watching me run. This is something I can do, something I even enjoy. My feet feel strange on the cushioned floor, bouncing with every step. But the blood pounding in my ears, the sweat, the pace, are all familiar. If I close my eyes, I can pretend I'm back in the village, with Killorn or my brothers, or just by myself, just free. That is until a section of the wall swings out, catching me in the stomach. It knocks me to the floor, sending me sprawling, but it's my pride that really hurts. The pack of runners pulls away, and Evangeline smirks over her shoulder, watching me fall behind. Only Maven slows his pace, waiting for me to catch up. "Welcome to training," he chuckles, watching me pry myself off the obstacle.
All over the room, other parts of the wall shift, forming barriers for the runners. Everyone else takes it in stride. They're used to this. Cal and Evangeline lead the pack, moving over and under each obstacle as it appears before them. Out of the corner of my eye, I notice the provost Telki directing the pieces of wall, making them move. He even seems to be smirking at me. I fight back the urge to snap at the Telki and push myself back into a jog. Maven runs next to me, never more than a step away, and it's strangely infuriating. My pace quickens until I'm sprinting and hurtling to the best of my ability. But Maven isn't like the security at home. It's hard to leave him in the dust. By the time we finish laps, Cal is the only one who hasn't broken a sweat. Even Evangeline looks ragged, though she tries her best to hide it. My breath comes in heavy pants, but I'm proud of myself. Despite the rough start, I manage to keep up. Instructor Arvin surveys us for a moment, his eyes lingering on me before turning to the Telki.
"Targets, please, Theo,"
he says, again, barely a whisper. Like drawing away a curtain to reveal the sun, I feel my abilities rushing back. The Telki assistant waves a hand, sliding away a section of the floor, revealing the strange gun I saw from the window of Blanos' classroom. I realize it's not a gun at all, but a cylinder. Only the Telki's power makes it move, not some greater strange technology. The abilities are all they have. "Lady Titanos," Arvin murmurs, making me shudder. "I understand you have an interesting ability." He's thinking of the lightning, the purple-white bolts of destruction, but my mind strays to what Julian said yesterday. "I don't just control, I can create. I'm special." Every eye turns to me, but I set my jaw, trying to will myself into being strong. "Interesting, but not unheard of, instructor," I say. "I'm very eager to learn about it, sir."
"You may start now," the instructor says,
and the Telki behind him tenses. On cue, one of the ball targets flies into the air faster than I thought possible.
"Control," I tell myself, repeating Julian's words. "Focus."
This time, I can feel the pull as I suck the electricity from the air, and from somewhere inside myself. It manifests in my hands, shining to life in little sparks. But the ball smacks the floor before I can throw it, its sparks bleeding into the floor and disappearing. Evangeline snickers behind me, but when I turn to glare at her, my eyes find Maven instead. He barely nods, urging me to try again. And next to him, Cal crosses his arms, his face dark with an emotion I can't place. Another target rockets up, turning over in the air. The sparks come sooner now, alive and bright as the target reaches its zenith. Like before in Julian's classroom, I ball my fist, and feeling the power rage through me, I throw. It arcs in a beautiful display of destructive light, clipping the side of the falling target. It shatters under my power, smoking and sparking as it hits the floor with a crash. I can't help but grin, pleased with myself. Behind me, Maven and Cal clap, as do a few of the other kids. Evangeline and her friends certainly do not. They look almost insulted by my victory. But Instructor Arvin doesn't say anything, not bothering to congratulate me. He simply looks over me, to the rest of the unit.
"Next."
The instructor runs the class ragged, forcing us through round after round of exercises meant to fine-tune our abilities. Of course, I fall behind in all of them, but I can also feel myself improving. By the time the session ends, I'm dripping sweat and sore all over. Julian's lesson is a blessing, allowing me to sit and recover my strength. But even the session that morning cannot entirely drain me. Midnight is coming. The faster time passes, the closer to midnight I get, the closer to taking the next step, to taking control of my fate. Julian doesn't notice my unease, probably because he's elbow deep in a pile of newly bound books. Each one is about an inch thick and neatly labeled with a year, but nothing else. What they could possibly be, I don't know. "What are these?" I ask, picking up one. Inside, it's a mess of lists. names, dates, locations, and causes of death. Most just say blood loss, but there's also disease, suffocation,